Let's have a show. There's an air conditioner running, but I'm told you can't hear that. You can just hear the annoying trumpet, so fuck it. You're not gonna say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum wine, yeah. You're asking the questions that nobody could. Like where the bone thugs in. Are they in harmony? Hey everybody, welcome to one of these where we're actually in the studio again. We need to be in the studio once in a while because there are things to do. There are important things to be done that can't be done while I'm driving by me because I am not that multifaceted. I'm not that multicultural. That's my segue into getting back to a listener email. Now, sometime at some point, I was like, no more talking about social issues, right? And I don't really want to talk about it, but I'm going to read the email that came because, what, you know, no one fucking emails me. So that's a pretty easy, if you want to have an email read on this show, here's the procedure. Make an email and then send it to me. So here's the deal. Okay, it was episode 282, so, you know, do the fucking math. And I was saying how I thought the controversy about Trump's wife was overblown, about her stealing what was being called Michelle Obama's speech, because I was like, she didn't fucking write that anyway, someone else did. So here's what I got. And I will just not include the person's name, just because, well, I guess I'll include what she gave and not the rest. Also, if you want to have an email read on the show, and especially if you're going to disagree, include a graphic, because that makes me way more excited to read it. So here we go. Hello, Pete. This will be my first project in becoming Paul Mooney. And then we've got a graphic. Ask a Black Lady with Jen. In episode 282, you thought the controversy about Melania... I'm sorry, I don't know how to say this lady's name. Trump... Mrs. Trump? I don't know why that just cracked me up to be like Mrs. Trump, but I guess it did. About Melania was overblown and not true appropriation. Ian offered some explanation, but I don't think it reached the real reason that black people were upset. The black cultural narrative includes a particular dynamic. White people and culture have historically taken the best of our mental labors, emotional lives, and physical bodies, while at the same time declaring that black people are more violent, more aggressive, lazier, and less attractive... creative, poetic, artistic, and intelligent. Sorry, I'm not reading this well. The magnitude of what was taken from blacks collectively combined with the fact that our contributions went almost completely unacknowledged for so long leads to a sense that the theft is not merely incidental but systemic. Do I feel like somehow when I say blacks, that's just the little accent or something makes it sound bad to me. One particularly painful example of this is the theft of black lyrics and music. It hurts because black people made gospel for themselves as a means of encouragement and resistance, and I think blacks believe that, like thoughts, it was one of the few things that could not be taken from them. R&B and rock followed from gospel. At the time, black musicians were censored from radio. White labels knew the music was good, so they took it for white artists. White versions were on the radio, so white artists and labels received credit. Haha, you think there's something we can't take? I'll show you. That's what them Native Americans thought. And we showed, they're like, you can't like own land. And we're like, interesting perspective. let's see. Because music is a collaborative process, some black artists in the 50s may not have written all of their own lyrics, but those songs were written for them. In the same, I'm adding my own emphasis, by the way. I think this is making it sound terrible. I've had drinks, you guys. In the same way, Michelle Obama didn't write that speech, but it was written for her with the intent that she would deliver that message. Actually, I think the phrase, your word is your bond, probably did come from Michelle Obama, because that phrase is part of a black oral tradition that whites are unfamiliar with. I've heard my mother say it countless times. But regardless whether or not Michelle Obama wrote any of her speech, those words were meant for her in the way that a black recording artist's lyric were meant for them. A white woman taking those words without giving credit feels like an instance of the larger dynamic. If you want to go a little deeper into the specific race-gender dynamic, black women are particularly aware that white women have historically taken credit for black women's creativity and words in the writing of cookbooks. They routinely took credit for recipes that their black cooks created. I think people realize that the blame goes beyond Melania. God, that fucking name. Can she just be Melanie? It's one letter off from Melanie. She's just got to be special. But it's hard to say who exactly is at fault in the way that we might not know whether it was the artists, songwriters, producers, or labels that stole black artists' music. But black people do know this has happened before, so we must call it out. Tangent, I don't really like Tennessee whiskey, but I think it's cool that Jack Daniel's has decided to give credit to the contributions of black people in creating one of the world's most popular whiskeys. Hopefully I didn't sound as harsh as Paul Mooney. Now, no, I didn't find that to be harsh. I think the way I read it sounded harsher. I don't like Jack Daniel's either, working from bottom to top. Now, I did send a reply email. I guess I could read it. Am I just reading emails? Is that boring? Okay, here's what I said. I can't disagree with any of that, especially because you included a graphic. Okay. I think my real gripe is that the writers never seem to get credit for their work. I can't compare that to the same level as the way black people haven't gotten credit, for sure. I just get tired of nobody talking about the writer, and I get worked up about it more than I should. Comic books, the character takes center stage. Music, the performer. Movies, the director, the actor, and occasionally the writer because the writer is also the director or is Aaron Sorkin. Speechwriters are so under the radar that we're kind of supposed to pretend they don't exist. We openly mock people who pursue English degrees and MFAs, barista degrees, meanwhile they're doing all this great stuff that makes our entertainment better and our government sound passionate. All that said, pretty terrible, foolish choice when the words come out of the mouths of those two very different women. I think I see your point, and if I remove my cynicism about politics and order participation in speech writing, yes, me plagiarizing Maya Angelou would be way more fucked up than me plagiarizing James Patterson. And being a writer is definitely more choice-driven than being black, and it would suck to be born and come to expect that anything good you do will be ripped off and anything shitty highlighted as proof you're no good. That's pretty unwinnable. Also, I'm totally with you on the recipe thing, except please don't tell me someone was making trash can nachos before Guy Fieri. I felt like it was the most Guy Fieri thing that ever happened, and to find out he stole that would shatter my worldview completely. One time he made a bunch of nachos in a fucking garbage can. That's real life. Okay, so that was the call and response. It's interesting that, you know, I don't disagree with any of this. And maybe I don't even really remember what I said, but I'm sure I said, you know, a bunch of dumb shit. However, I also think, you know, at this time, so right now I'm the community manager of this website, Lit Reactor, which basically means I monitor the forums to kind of see, like, are people being assholes to each other? And mostly they're not. Sometimes they are, but in a way that, you know, it's a weird responsibility to be the community manager. I did see one time two sort of members going at each other in the comments, but I also felt like these people seem fine. They both seem to be holding their own. They both know how to get in touch with me. So I think I'm just going to let it ride. And I did, and it was fine. At any rate, there's a forum there, and someone was basically posting about how they were going to be pursuing an MFA. And every person they talked to was like, that is a waste of time and money, you know, and they were kind of like, does anyone who's done something like this have, you know, good things to say, like good comebacks, basically, when someone says you're wasting your money or your time or whatever getting an MFA, like that's a colossal waste of time. And this is like happening right at the same time. And I really do feel like, you know, people devalue the work of writers, and especially speech writers, because it's like we're supposed to pretend like they don't exist. We're supposed to pretend like they have no business, or, you know, they don't, you know, they're probably just taking somebody's words and making them, you know, tweaking them a little bit, right? But the truth is, we don't really know. And so the thing is, I think that to me, like I said, I totally understand why it's upsetting from the angle of like, well, anything black people do is just taken by a white person. Although, I don't know how successful her stealing of that was. I guess we'll find out in November, huh? But I don't know. And like I said, also, I completely understand why, in particular, someone like her taking something from someone like Michelle Obama is, you know, problematic. And at the same time, I don't think I was happy about it. I don't think I was like, oh, it's no big deal. Or at least that's not how I feel now. I think that how I feel is like, doesn't everyone know that they're like speechwriters write most of this stuff? I mean, isn't that, I don't know. I just feel like there are writers involved with everything, but you know, we very rarely know the names of the people who wrote our favorite TV shows. Or, you know, when people are talking about movies they liked, like how many people know who wrote this or that movie? You know what I mean? How many people know who wrote the comics that The Dark Knight kind of was based on, right? I mean, who wrote The Dark Knight and all this stuff? Like, I think a lot of people don't know. And that's fucked up. It's a thing that comes up in comics a lot because it's like, I think grown-up comic fans who read a lot follow writers. And they don't follow, it's not so much like, oh, I love Spider-Man, I'm just going to read all of Spider-Man. And, you know, whatever happens with him, I'm in. It's more like, well, what's Warren Ellis up to today? But non-fans don't seem to understand that or appreciate it. So anyway, I don't disagree. And also, I have an additional problem with it, I guess. An additional, different, lesser problem. So there we go. So that's been our segment of emails from people who are listeners, or hopefully, you know, maybe she gave up because it's been like fucking 2 or 3 months since I got that email. I emailed back quickly and meant to read it on the show, and I don't know if I've done a live or an on mic one since then. Who knows? But we did it. We took care of it. It happened. And hopefully she's still listening and I can bring up something else that she can write an email about and we'll be like, hey, all right. She's still listening. Well, I had an incident today that I'd like to talk about. I'm trying to read on my hand something, but this looks like Book Shiva and Undyne. I don't know what that means. But anyway, I had a run-in today with, okay, I'm going to describe a type of person from a country that you may, and I just want you to think in your mind which country these people are probably from. These people are stereotyped as being extremely polite and being Canadian. I ran out of, you know, I was like, what am I going to talk about? Fucking syrup and snow? Shit, hockey? I guess. I mean, they're fucking Canadian, okay? I had a run-in with some Canadians today. So it was our annual-ish golf tournament that we do more than once a year. So it's not really annual. Biannual? Multi-annual? Whatever. It was a golf tournament that we play in every year. Now, for this golf tournament, we dress up because it's fun. So, you know, we have like a team theme. So in the past, our theme's been purple or gold or different things like that. And this year, we went balls out and we bought a little something called the tracksuito. What is the tracksuito, you might ask? Because you can't put it together by the name, which I, you know, I'm questioning a lot of things about you if that's the case. The tracksuito is if you combined the looks of a tuxedo with the also the looks of a tracksuit, you would have a tracksuito. So basically, it's a tracksuit with tuxedo print. You know those tuxedo t-shirts? It's kind of like that, but it is a little improved for two reasons. Number one, the pants have the little tuxedo silk down the side. And number two, the there's a bow tie that Velcros across, but it's an actual 3D bow tie. And also, actually, the sleeves of the jacket come down and then there's like a white trim on the end. So it kind of looks like your shirt sleeves coming out from the end, which is a nice touch. But basically that's what we're talking about is like a tuxedo t-shirt taken to the next level, right? So that's what we're wearing. And we all bought different colors because for some fucking reason, when you go on Amazon to buy a tracksuito, this is a nice guide for everyone out there who's looking to outfit a team in tracksuitos. The different sizes cost different amounts, but it's not like you would expect where I'm like, well, I think the big ones cost more, right? Because they're just more fucking fabric or just because they can. It just, you know, okay, an orange. You know, the most expensive might be small. The least expensive is large. And then medium and extra large are somewhere, you know, outside of whatever. And then you move on to the red one. Well, in the red one, the double XL is the cheapest. And so, you know, and it's just, there's no rhyme or reason. There's no uniformity between the colors and how they work. It's fucking just craziness. So we had to, the big decision we made was, are we going to all wear the same color? Because if we were, then we'd get the black ones, right? But if we're not going to wear the same color, then no one gets black. We all get colors. So I was in an orange tracksuito. We had a green, we had a pink, and we had a red. So we're at this golf tournament. By the way, one of my teammates, so we're like one of the few co-ed teams that play in this tournament. And one of my teammates was like, this golf tournament is like a real sausage fest. And I looked around and I was like, you're totally right, because I always notice when a team has a woman on it. At this tournament, we play another one where I'm like, I feel like that one's like approaching 50-50. And she was like, I agree, but this one is like a total sausage fest. And I was like, you're right. So we're one of the few teams that has a co-ed nature going on. And so we, you know, we make a stop, you go back and forth, and we make a bathroom stop. So the ladies on our team went to the bathroom. And one of my other male teammate and I go up to the tee and we're teeing off. And, you know, probably 100 feet away, there's another group of dudes, right? And this guy starts yelling at us. And he's like, hey, you guys look like fags in those. But I love it. And we're just kind of like, what? Because I got to tell you, it has been so long since I've heard fag or faggot used that way, right? That's like, wow, okay. And he's like yelling it across, right? Now, his teammates seem to be like shutting him up, and one of his teammates were like, I'm sorry, he's really drunk and he's Canadian. And I didn't know if Canadian had, I didn't know if he was saying he's Canadian so that I could say like, yeah, well, you're fucking Canadian, so what do you want me to do? Or if he was like, Is fag not a thing in Canada? Like, is that a thing that we're still saying in Canada? I didn't know, but I was just like, you know what? It seems like his friends are like, dude, shut the fuck up. What are you doing? You know? So I'm like, what are you going to do? We've all been in that situation where a buddy is saying something that you're like, let's not do that, huh? And they're just wasted being a shithead. So whatever. You know, you just chalk it up to being wasted and being a shithead. Also, I mean, I just, you know, I don't know. That's not like a hurtful word for me, because it's a weird thing to think about how one is supposed to react to this word, right? Because on the one hand, you're like, this guy's being a real asshole. And on the other hand, you're like, well, I don't know. How outraged am I supposed to be about someone calling, basically saying, like, you're gay? Because it's like, well, I don't know. That's fine if you think that. I don't really care. But anyway, so we move on, right? And then we finish up and we go, we're like in a line to eat some unseasoned tacos. And we're at this buffet. And this guy comes walking in, different guy, but from the same team. And he's like, oh, there you guys are. It's the faggots. And this was to now me, my male teammate, and one of our female teammates. And he just like comes up and says this like he's like, I don't know, like that was our team name or something. Like we were like signed up and we're like, let's call ourselves the faggots. So he's just like, hey, it's the faggots. And, you know, me and the one female teammate just kind of like, okay. And we just walked away because I didn't know what to say. And then our other male teammate caught up with us and he's like, what the fuck is that guy's problem? And I was like, I don't know. And, you know, I was telling the ladies on our team about this because they were in the bathroom at the time, right? During the first one. And I was like, I kind of chalked that one up to just like, he's drunk, whatever. But then I was like, but this was a different guy on the same team. And he didn't seem that drunk. And he just was like, right, saying it. And he had a definitely a Canadian sounding accent. So anyway, you know, and my other teammate was like, was he like trying to pick a fight with us or something? And I was like, that hadn't even occurred to me, you know, because I was just like, I don't know. What are the words that men say when they're like, let's have a fight? But also I'm like, he was like a fucking old man in a golf clubhouse drunk at like 2 in the afternoon. Are people picking fights there? So here's what I couldn't tell. I don't know if he was trying to be a real shithead. I don't know if Canada, if faggot doesn't mean the same or doesn't carry the same weight. You know how like it seems like in the UK that they throw out cunt with like reckless abandon, or that to them it's like, I don't know, us saying something like bitch or some, you know, it's a lesser swear somehow. Somehow that the level of swear has not crossed the pond or has or something. Anyway, so I wonder about that. I don't know. But I also am like, yeah, like when can you like, but okay, here's what's weird about it too. It's like, is he trying to pick a fight with us? But I'm also like, well, what am I, you know, I don't know. You know, it was like, it was a nice test of the, not a nice test. It was like a test of, you know, a person's limits of like, hey, how much shit will you take off some fucking idiot? But at the same time, I was like, well, what am I going to do? Punch this guy? I mean, I didn't really want to punch him. I didn't really want to have a problem with him. Also, part of me wonders, I think sometimes when we're golfing, because we're having a great time, but we're not taking it seriously, because this is something I've learned about golf that I did not know. When you're at like a tournament like the ones we go to, which is called four-man scramble. So here's what that means. Everyone hits off the tee, and then you go to the best ball of the four, and then everyone hits from that spot, and you go from the best ball from there. So basically, it's like a four-person team, but you count the best score if you combined all of your efforts. And the point of saying that is that like serious golfers don't take that mode of play super seriously, because they're like, well, I mean, that's not really a test of my skills. It's like, as long as 1 in 4 is decent, we're good. So the point is, like, sometimes I think people get pissed off because we're having a good time or whatever. But, you know, we're not, like, slow. We're not holding up the progress. We're not really doing anything bad. We're just, you know, having a good time. But I think people take golf very seriously, even in that non-serious situation. We went to this hole where they had free shots of Fireball for some reason. And the people working that were like having a great time. And they're like, oh my God, like, we're glad you guys are having a good time. They're like, there are a couple people out here who are like real serious. But you know, they're like, honestly, we've only had a couple complaints the whole day just from some old assholes or whatever. And there's a guy who takes our team photo every year, which always turns out great. And he's always like, you guys are like my favorite every year. You guys know how to do it right. You know, like you're having a good time and whatever. And the tournament has slowly moved that way. You know, there are more drink holes. There's more screwing around going on. But anyway, I couldn't tell. So I was like, maybe we pissed him off because he's like, you guys are making a mockery of this beautiful sport. Although I would say this to that. I mean, you're going to critique the outfit of a tuxedo, but you're in like a polo shirt and some shitty cargo shorts and a hat that looks like it came, you know, you bought for a fishing trip 15 years ago and have worn ever since in the harsh Canadian winter. Go fuck yourself, you old piece of shit. Are you kidding me? But anyway, the point of this is that I'm like, you know, I don't know that I know any other Canadians. But the reputation that I had heard was that they are like overly polite. And I would say what I experienced today was the exact opposite of that. So, Canada, what the fuck? If there's any Canadian listeners to this who would like to explain the behavior of their people, that would be great. And remember, I like to get, most people are like, hey, if you have a complaint about the show, don't send it to me. You know, I actually like it. So make sure to send it to me. Send it when you're at your peak of anger. And, you know, that's the fun way to do it. Hold on. Don't book. Bookstore. Oh, bookstore update is what this says. One of the last times we talked, I told you I was volunteering at a bookstore and there was an obnoxious lady there. She was there again for several hours when I worked. And shared with me, now I've talked with this person for like a total of 3 hours in my life. And, you know, willingly, 20 minutes. The rest of that time was me going like, okay, well, you know, and trying to be like, well, better get to work. But told me how she had a really hard time connecting to her daughter when she was born because she was totally unplanned. And she conceived her when she was very drunk and doesn't even remember it. And also, you know, that was what the relationship with the father was like. And I was like, you know, okay, that's not really the information. I didn't particularly need that information. Let's put it that way. I wasn't like, in order to really understand you, I feel like I need to know a little more about your sex life, your use of alcohol and drugs, and also, you know, how things went with your daughter early on and for the first like 5 years of her life. And she's just telling me, you know, oh yeah, I almost gave her up for adoption to some friends because da da da. And I was just like, why are you telling me this? This is so much stuff to tell me that I don't want to know. Like, I really don't want to know it. So that's my bookstore update. We have an important thing to do. Hang on just a second. I got to scooch over. Two book-related things to do. One of them is that I'm doing this little experiment with the Choose Your Own Adventure books. Now, these are terrible fucking books for many reasons. I wrote a little column about it if you'd like to read it. But I'm trying to experiment with some different methods in order to actually get through one of these. So I thought one of the methods I would try is to do it on this radio show. And then if you could like tweet or Facebook or email or text me and say which choice you think I should take, you know, we'll have until the next episode for people to vote. And we'll try and get through one of these together. But we'll also talk about it. So the one I've got today is The Trail of Lost Time. It looks like some Asian people on a horse. I don't know what's happening. One of them has that haircut. Like, this is like, I don't know, medieval times or something. Okay, it's a haircut where it's bald, except for they've got the ring around the back, like you see, what is, a monk? And then also, though, in the front, it's like just a row of bangs coming straight off. I don't know what this haircut is, but it's a pretty weird one. Kids love reading Choose Your Own Adventure. This is right on the inside. These are, I guess, supposedly reviews. Let's see what they say. Matt Harmon, age 11, says, these books are like games. Sometimes the choice seems like it will solve everything, but you wonder if it's a trap. Ava Kendrick says, I think you'd call this a book for active readers, and I am definitely an active reader. Chun Tao Lin says, you decide your own fate, but your fate is still a surprise. Ben Curley says, come on in this book if you're crazy enough. One wrong move and you're a goner. Ben Curley knows what's up. He's like, open this if you're fucking nuts. Celia Lawton says, you can read Choose Your Own Adventure books so many wonderful ways. You could go find your dog or follow a unicorn. Yeah, right. I haven't made any of those kind of fucking choices. So let's do this. Now, here's an interesting thing that always happens. It's like beware and warning, and then it gives you like an intro. And then basically, you just start in on the book. And the intro is like, don't read this book in order. So here we go. You stare at the envelope with your name written in faded ink. The lawyer handed it to you an hour ago after he read your grandfather's will. Your grandfather, Jasper Ambergris, was a world-famous archaeologist. What is ambergris? Is that like a booze or something? Is that like a, or is that like some kind of whale fat bullshit or something? I feel like that's what it is, but I don't know why. A wax-like substance that originates as a secretion in the intestines of the sperm whale found floating in tropical seas and used in perfume manufacture. Sometimes the things that you know are just, like, so fucking stupid. Like, I don't remember talking about this speech very well. And, you know, like, I don't remember what I'm sure I said, which is, like, stupid. But then ambergris, I'm like, I know what that is. That's the shit that comes out of whales. I feel like I read something where somebody found a huge piece of it somehow. Is this a Bob's Burgers or some shit? There's a great, I'm looking at a great, it's like a cross section of a whale. And it shows its muscles, spermacety organ. And then it's got a huge green area underneath that I guess would be like if you think just above the whale's top jaw where its nose would be if it had like a people nose. And it just says junk. It's just like, there's a bunch of shit in there. Yeah, it looks like it. There's muscle. There's a spermacety organ. And then there's just this thing that says junk, parentheses, melon. That's really weird. Hey, whales, I have an idea. Maybe you wouldn't have to be so fucking big if you weren't just carrying all this junk around in your face. Okay? All right. Your grandfather, Jasper Ambergris, was a world-famous archaeologist. Of course he was. He left the ranch in New Mexico to your parents where you spend every summer. He left you some stocks and bonds to pay for college. See, this always has all these details, and I'm like, who fucking cares? Last of all, he left you the envelope you're looking at. The lawyer said something very strange when he handed it to you. Your grandfather said that what was in this envelope was the most valuable thing of all. Then he gave you a wink. Oh, my God. He gave you a wink, a quick tuck job, and then you learned a lot about love. Your mind drifts back 4 years when you and your grandfather were digging near a midden or garbage heap about a half mile from the old adobe house where he lived. Yeah, we're just digging in an old garbage heap. You remember the rocky, dry, reddish soil, the desert plants, a few flowers, and the scrub pinyon dotting the rough hillside. That was when you saw in a flash in the sunlight something white and shiny. What is that, you wondered. You brushed the red dirt away quickly. A skull. You found a fossilized skull. It was when you touched the skull that something really strange happened. What have you got there, your grandfather asked. You gave him the strangest look as the words tumbled into your head. This is the fossilized skull of an Anasazi Paleo Indian. Carbon dating and DNA sampling will most probably reveal it as 2,200 years old. Male, aged around late teens, died of wounds from hunting prototype bison? Your grandfather raised his eyebrows, smiled, and nodded. So you have the gift, he said, sounding impressed. What the fuck? I was wondering if anyone else in the family would inherit it. You see, no one knows this, not even your parents, but whenever I make a new find, a pot or a basket, well, all I have to do is touch it, and somehow I know how old it is and where it came from. Does that mean you'll tell me what's in the hidden canyon at the far end of the ranch? So, what I'm discovering is my grandfather's just some fucking fraud, because he's like, listen, I told them I did a bunch of archaeology shit, but actually I just touched the thing and I just immediately know. So, which actually I think is what all archaeologists are doing. They're all full of shit. They're all just like, oh, this is a paleo Neolithic bone or whatever. Your grandfather just smiled. One day I will. Just be patient. You glance down now at your grandfather's envelope. He told the lawyer that it contained the most valuable thing he owned. Does it contain clues to the location of the ancient boxed canyon that was kept secret and off-limits? To be honest, I don't think it actually exists, your dad said one day when you asked. Those stories about people disappearing into the canyon are just rumors. People disappearing? You rip open the envelope. My God. Kurt Vonnegut says this thing about stories, which is like start as close to the end as possible. And these stories do the opposite. They're like, how much extra detail can we give you? Oh, was there pinion around? Oh my God, that's amazing. Okay, and this is in a Courier New font, so I guess it's a letter. My dear child, when I was a young man, studying for my archaeology degree, I had a vivid dream. So this is when he was studying for the degree, when he could just touch things. And this would be like me getting a degree in Olympic sprinting if I was just naturally the fastest man alive. Why would you get a degree in something that you can just immediately do and master? In it, I entered a narrow gorge no wider than a man. He was no wider than a man. The gorge led to a round room carved out of rock, but open to the sky. Once inside, I could travel to many places in time, even back before human habitation on planet Earth. I realized that the room was a kiva, the kind used by the Pueblo Indians as a place of ceremony. And this dream kiva was a kind of wormhole into the past. Years later, on a dig here in New Mexico, I came face to face with the same narrow gorge, except this time it was real. The entrance to the space was between two tall rocks and nearly invisible. The gorge twisted and turned and finally led onto the same ancient kiva open to the sky. Thus below, I give you my most precious possession. It is a drawing of the canyon entrance and a map that will take you there. Once inside, follow the trail to the second left after the first right. Upon entering the kiva, look for the ancient map carved into the sandstone. Study it closely before choosing. You must feel your way, and it will guide you well. If you pay close attention, it will lead you home. Good luck. Much love, Grandpa Jasper. Now, I feel like this is setting me up to have to make choices and remember what I was reading, which is not how these normally work. Normally, I'm just walking around, and then an arrow killed you out of fucking nowhere. I was literally reading one where it's like you sign up for the army, you join the army, and you're like in ancient China or something, and you're just walking along, and an arrow kills you, and you just wake up like in the afterlife, and your father's like, you didn't even see that coming, did you? And you're like, no, I guess not. He's like, well, welcome to heaven or whatever. Okay, so the entrance was between two tall rocks and nearly invisible. Once inside, follow the trail to the second left after the first right. Okay, so we have to find the first right and then the second left, you guys. And then look for the ancient map carved into the sandstone. All right. Fucking finally. You find your mom in the kitchen making dinner. Her eyes are red from crying, but you pretend not to notice. I'm going out for a walk, you say. That's fine, but be home in an hour, she says, or you'll be late for dinner. Right, you nod, taking off out the back door. You quickly hike past the horse paddocks and the old barn. You glance at the diagram in the letter and take the winding trail into the hills. A short while later, less than a half mile from the house, you come upon the canyon entrance just as your grandfather drew it. You have passed this way a million times, but you have never seen it before now. Do you have time to go inside and investigate, or should you wait and start fresh tomorrow? So here's the choice. If you decide to go investigate right away, we'll go to the next page. If you decide to go home for dinner and come back first thing in the morning, turn to page 9. So you, intrepid listeners, must make this choice, and you must make it within the next week. So, you know, if you're listening to this and it's fucking like November, don't contact me. Don't be like, oh, this choice. I will not acknowledge that. I don't want to know. What the fuck with... So, I wasn't paying great attention, and this could be part of why I'm not succeeding. But, so, I guess I'm supposed to assume or to know that Grandpa's dead, and this is Mom's dad. And when I go in the kitchen, it's like, hey, Mom, how's it going? And it's like, well, you know... pretty bad. I'm just going to cry. And you're like, cool. See you later. Like, that's kind of fucked up, right? You're just like, ugh. Mom, get over it. Your dad's been dead for like a week already. Jesus Christ. You know, you're going to just keep crying about it forever? I don't know. He gave me the entrance to the secret cave. Maybe if he cared about you, he would have done a little more, right? You would know where the cave was, not me. But that's not how it happened. So we've got one last thing on the docket for today. In my work at the bookstore, I came across a little something, the Wolf Cub Scout book that someone had donated. Now, this is the exact book I had in Cub Scouts. Those of you who've listened to this show will probably remember that my dad was our Cub Scout troop leader and was, you know, pretty famously horrible at it. You know, he set the garage on fire. He, you know, basically we would do weird projects every time. And then one day out of every quarter or something, we would have to like go through this entire fucking book, like in one meeting. And it was the most boring thing ever, so that we could like, you know, move on and become Weeblos. So the picture on this book is like, you know, out in nature, and a boy and what appears to be a wolf man dressed in scouting clothes, like looking off into a sunset. There are tracks on the ground. It's like wolf tracks next to a boy's tracks, you know, and it looks a little molestery. Now, this was owned by Jack, and he was in pack 194. And now you may be a Cub Scout if you are a boy who has completed the first grade or you are 8 years old. So I could be a Cub Scout. So I just wanted to look at this and see, you know, what kind of shit were they feeding me back then? Because I didn't read this book, right? So it starts with a parent guide. If you could give your boy the greatest gift of all, what would it be? It wouldn't be money or anything money can buy. Well, they're like, it wouldn't be money or anything the money can buy. If I could give my kid a gift, it wouldn't be money or anything money could buy. Well, what would it be then? What would it be, Mr. Wolf? Whether you're rich or poor, the greatest gift is within your power, because that gift is helping a boy become a self-reliant person with a good feeling about himself and a genuine concern for others. Oh. For more than 75 years, the Boy Scouts of America has helped families share this priceless gift with boys. Baden Powell, the founder of Scouting, based Cub Scouting on one of the stories in Rudyard Kipling's Jungle Books. It was called Mowgli's Brothers. We knew it as the story of Akela and Mowgli. Read the story twice, once yourself and a second time to your Cub Scout. Are you fucking kidding me? Nah, I'm not reading this whole story. There's wolves there. I'm looking at the picture. There's wolves. There's in a cave. They're fine. Everyone's okay. So let's just... Oh, there's a child abuse here thing. Child abuse in the intro. Child abuse falls into many forms, physical, mental, sexual, and even verbal, and it can be difficult to spot. But as a parent, you can teach your Cub Scout what to do when anyone makes him feel fearful or ashamed or touches him in an inappropriate manner. Explain that his body belongs only to himself and that he has the right to say no. Tell him to report any inappropriate activity to you immediately. The booklet, How to Protect Your Children from Child Abuse and Drug Abuse, in the front of this book gives more information on this vital subject and includes learning exercises. Try them with your son. Well, that's gone, so I guess I'm screwed. Also, though, it's like, why? How to Protect Your Children from Child Abuse and Drug Abuse, that couldn't be two separate pamphlets. I feel like that's two pamphlets worth of information at the very least, is it not? You only need one. You're like, I mean, we can protect them from most bad things with one pamphlet, right? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. I'm going to disagree. I think that those two topics, especially in the context of Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, warrant their own things. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. Get your badges. Ooh, sports and physical fitness. Akela is your friend. You have heard how Mowgli met Akela. Just as that story says, in a real wolf pack, all the wolves look to Akela, the leader, for guidance. When to work, when to learn, when to play. Akela makes sure each young wolf in the pack gets the chance to learn about the world and how to get along with other members of the pack. Akela is in a picture here and looks like fucking Tyler, the Creator, from that weird album cover. All right. So here we go. This is learning to say the Cub Scout promise. This is like the beginning. I, P, Peter promised to do my best, to do my duty, to God and my country, to help other people, and to obey the law of the pack. Whoa. Duty to God means put God first. Do what you know God wants you to do. And my country means do what you can. No fucking shit. What does my country mean? Jesus Christ. To help other people means do things for others that would please them. This is so stupid. This is like unbelievable. I mean, could they make it a... Oh, here's Weeblos. We be loyal scouts. There's the Cub Scout salute, which is like the thing that Japanese people do in pictures. Oh, and there's the Cub Scout handshake. So this is like a normal handshake, except instead of gripping with your whole hand, like you're holding a pipe or something, you hold out your index and middle finger and touch the other person's wrist with it. Put your first two fingers along the inside of the other boy's wrist. That seems like a... I wish I had that pamphlet about the sexual stuff, because I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure about this. Oh, and there's the salute. Oh, my God. Okay, I want to skip ahead to, like, the parts that our friend here had to fill in. Because there were some pretty good... Okay, like, feats of skill. So this is like a fitness thing, right? So here are requirements. Play catch with someone 10 steps away. Play until you can throw and catch. Walk a line back and forth. Do it sideways, too. Then walk the edge of a board 6 steps each way. Do a front roll. Do a back roll. Do a falling forward roll. See how high you can jump. Elephant walk, frog leap, crab walk. Swimming bullshit, bounce a basketball, run or jog 10 minutes. So stupid. Oh, the Pledge of Allegiance. This is fun. This is like that guy. The guy who's the football man. Who's like, fuck you, I'm not doing it. I wish that more people had done this. Take baths or showers often. Use soap. I like how it's a separate sentence. Take baths or showers often. Use soap. Also, there's a kid laying in bed. Aquila is the wolf man. Just creepily watching him sleep, and this boy is dreaming of different kinds of foods, and his dreams are organized by food type. You know, he's got dairy, meat, produce, grain, all kind of mixed apart here. It's a very weird thing to see this wolf man, because you're like, should you really be with this like topless wolf man who's wearing a kerchief or whatever? This is something I never understood about the scouts. Is that like when the adult is with the scouts and the adult is like has to wear the uniform? This is something I never understood about things like baseball, right? Okay, you know what? Who knows what they're doing is fucking hockey player coaches. Hockey coaches, I guess they're called. They're like, I'll wear a suit. Because what is a baseball player? A baseball coach thinks they got to wear those fucking pants. They're like, well, I might need to go up there and hit cleanup. You never know. And it's like, nah, I know. That's not going to happen, old man. Okay? Believe me. They could find anybody to go do that before you. They might as well do like a early 90s movie and pull Whoopi Goldberg out of the stands to hit a baseball. That's how they made her the coach of the Lakers or something, right? Wasn't she the coach of a major franchise in that movie, Eddie? You guys haven't seen that? Not up on your Eddie references? All right, I've had enough. Have you had enough? I'm just tired out, man. I don't know. Was those fighting words, those men's fighting words, seem like, I don't know, what words do men use when they fight? Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. We'll hear from you next time. We have big plans for October, as that's my favorite holiday-related month. So get ready for that. I hope it'll work out. We'll see you next time.